Want me to gavel in again? Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. I'm Senator Jackie Dingfelder. I chair the committee, and welcome back to some of the folks that we haven't seen in a while. I would like to welcome the committee members back, and of course we've been meeting during the interim, but we are here now for the month. So with that, I'm just going to ask each of the committee members to reintroduce themselves, and then we will go ahead and discuss the committee rules. This is the second year that I'm chairing this committee. I represent an area of northeast and southeast Portland, and this is the ninth year that I'm serving in the Oregon Legislature. And it's really an honor and a pleasure to be here with my colleagues and such wonderful committee members. Senator?
Thank you, Chair.
Mark Haas from Beaverton in southwest Portland, Washington County.
Lori Brzezinski, District 4, which takes in parts of Elaine and Douglas counties.
Brian Boquist, rural Willamette Valley.
Great, thank you. And also, we are very fortunate to have very dedicated and committed staff, and I would like to thank our staff who has worked with us over the past year and a half, and Beth Petrino, who has worked on many of these issues for years, and would like to thank her for service. And Beth, if you wanted to say a few words about your background.
Sure. Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Beth Petrino. I'm staffing this committee as well as the House Environment and Water Committee this session, and I have staffed many committees for many years.
Great.
In the past.
And Sue, we couldn't do what we do without you, so I'd like to thank you. Great, thank you. And last but not least, my vice chair, would you like to introduce yourself and tell folks where you're from? And
Jason Atkinson from Southern Oregon.
Excellent, thank you. With that, I will entertain a motion for the committee rules. I'm hoping everybody has had a chance to take a look at them.
Madam Chair, I move the rules as proposed.
Okay. Senator Atkinson moves to adopt the proposed committee rules as they're dated February 2nd, 2010. Is there any discussion?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Just a clarification, as I did in the last committee, 5A indicates one-hour notice, and a lot of us members are curious when the one-hour notice will kick in. And I know you don't have an answer, but hopefully some of the committee chairs will find that out from
Great.
The good president.
Thank you. So noted for the record, and I appreciate you bringing that up this morning, and I'm hoping by this afternoon we will have an answer. Okay, with that, seeing no objections to adoption of the rule, the rules are adopted. Okay. And with that, we will go into our first public hearing. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 997. And Beth, if you can provide us with a description. Thank you very much.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 997 modifies the description of the Oregon Conservation Strategy in statute. You should also have in front of you a -2 amendment, which modifies additional provisions in statute that refer to the conservation strategy. We've gotten both a revenue and fiscal statement, and there is no revenue, no fiscal impact either.
Great, thank you. And as you can see, this was sponsored by Senator Schrader. And thank you for being here today, Senator, and I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. This is simply a housekeeping piece to the Transfer Development Credit Bill that was passed in the previous session. It is simply adding the language that actually defines the conservation strategy adopted by the State Fish and Wildlife Commission and published by the State Department of Fish and Wildlife in September of 2006. It is appropriately added through the body of the bill and largely makes no substantive changes as much as it's just a clarification of the conservation strategy, and that we are looking at that as this bill moves us through a transfer development process. So with that, very brief testimony, good bill. I hope that we can add this modification and move it to the appropriate place on the floor.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for the senator? Gentlemen, any questions? Okay. Anybody would like to testify on this? We don't have anybody signed up, but is there anybody that would like to testify on this amendment to the bill? Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing. And I will open up a work session, and I will entertain a motion for this amendment.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt the -2 amendments.
Senator Atkinson moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated February 1st, 2010. Is there any discussion? And I would like to just ask Beth to comment on the fiscal.
There is no fiscal or revenue impact of the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, and we have that paperwork. Just want to call it to everyone's attention. Okay, is there any discussions or questions? All right, any objections? Actually, and I want to note that Senator Prezanski is excused. If not, the amendments are adopted. Another motion?
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill as adopted to the floor.
Senator Atkinson.
Recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 997 as amended with the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion carries, and Senator Prezanski is excused. And Senator Schrader, would you like to carry this to the floor?
Thank you for that privilege. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. With that, I will close the work session for Senate Bill 997. And is Senator Edwards here? I don't know if he's outside. We were planning to do Senate Bill 1022 because it will be a very short bill as well, we think. And if not, then we will move on to our other bill.
Okay. That means everybody else is here for one bill then.
Me. Just stand at ease for a moment. And hopefully Senator Edwards will be here shortly, but we do have a couple of folks signed up, so I'm going to ask the City of Junction City of David Klein, won't you come up please? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Klein, I'm the City Administrator for the City of Junction City, and I'm here on behalf in support of the bill and the amendments to the bill as proposed for 1022.
So could you provide a little background about why this bill is necessary? I don't know if all the committee members are up to speed on that. I know that Senator Edwards is going to provide a little bit of information, but obviously you're probably very familiar with the issue at hand.
Yeah, I'll try and summarize that as quickly as I can for you. The measures before you came before you as a result of our efforts to facilitate the construction of both the new state mental hospital and the center. Well, to facilitate the construction of both the state hospital and the state and the new state prison facilities in the Junction City area. To accomplish that required extension of water and sewer services south to the facilities, approximately 3 miles. And the most efficient and cost-effective course to do so was to go west of Highway 99 through properties that are not within currently within the urban growth boundary. For reasons primarily of equity and cost savings, that was the route to be chosen. And for reasons of equity, we felt that it was very appropriate to find a way to provide service to the properties whose properties were being taken for easements to serve those facilities, but were not otherwise eligible to tie into that infrastructure. So the basic equity question is: you're being asked to sell an easement for water and sewer service. You may have a failing septic system or a failing well, and yet you're not under law allowed to tie into that system. So this is a remedy that we've worked together with the senator to construct to help solve that problem on behalf of those property owners and maintain good relations throughout the area.
We have received the high quality GIS handout here.
Those are our construction.
No, this is
saving money here.
Why don't we have Senator Edwards, why don't you go ahead and make a few comments where we ask questions. I didn't mean to, whoever wrote this, it's very clear.
I wrote it.
I'm used to all the, you know, GIS maps that we get, so this is great.
Well, thank you. My
My name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator in West Eugene, North Eugene, and Junction City. We started working on this issue, it was a few months ago maybe, and what you have before you is a bill, and I'll just refer you to the high-quality map that I've drawn, not to scale by any means, but I hope that it illustrates the point.
I had hoped you got your slide rule out.
No. What you see at the bottom of the map there is the city of Junction City. As you go south, that up on the map is south to the prison and hospital site. You can see where that's located. That is Highway 99 that runs between the two, and the dotted line extending from Junction City and taking in the prison and hospital site is the urban growth boundary extension. You can see on the other side of Highway 99, that would be the west side, there are what are about 30 properties which are not within the UGB. Regardless of whether we have this bill or not, the sewer and water line to service from Junction City to service the prison site and the hospital site will be going across those properties. So it's a matter of whether or not those folks are disposed to granting an easement, or whether or not at public cost we are going to have to do condemnation and a full taking in order to cross their property. I think that many of the property owners would probably be more disposed to granting an easement at much lower cost to the public if they were simply allowed to hook up to a sewer line and a water line that is already, regardless of whether or not we do anything here today, is going to be going across their property. So that's the essence of the bill. We have dash one amendments, which you have before you, which makes some definitional changes, just in terms of making sure who is and who is not included. Nothing really big there, and also sunsets. Also adds a sunset to the ability to hook up. That would be 3 years out from the day that the city of Junction City starts providing services through those lines. We also have dash two amendments, which are some technical corrections requested by the Department of Corrections, definitional in nature. And then we have some dash, well, they don't have numbers assigned to them yet, but we have some amendments being prepared, which are not ready for the committee today, that would make the bill take effect 1 year from the date of signing. And so that would essentially honor the exceptions process that is in law currently, and that process could move forward to come up with a solution. But if that solution were not reached within a year, the property owners and the city would have some assurance that this was going to happen, and I think everybody would be more amenable to entering into negotiations over easements if they had that assurance, and we wouldn't miss any construction time or have to expend extra public dollars that wouldn't otherwise be necessary. So,
and Senator Edwards, we do not have the amendments in front of us today, so we're obviously...
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Yeah, we're getting them, although obviously the last one that you talked about is not, it's still in drafting. So
right.
We have the dash ones and twos, is that correct?
Right.
But we obviously won't be working this bill today because we still have some more work to do. But I have a question for Mr. Klein regarding if these 30 properties, assuming that they're on septic or using domestic wells right now, will they be required to hook up? Will they be required to pay a hookup fee? What's the arrangement that the city's seeing with that?
The cost for hookups would be the same as it is for any other property within the city. I don't think we're looking to provide special favors to people, but rather to provide them access to those services. There's still always a cost to the city for providing those costs, and those costs we do pass on. Otherwise, they're subsidized by our city residents. So we're merely looking for access to those services for those parties at the same rate structure as any other resident or non-resident the city would have available to them.
Okay. Any other questions? And we will have the Department of Land Conservation Development coming up here afterwards to answer additional questions. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. I guess the first one's just a simple technical, either to the good senator or to Beth, and that is line 16, 17, and whatever, 20, so many feet. We're going to get an amendment that tells us how many feet this is within the right-of-way so that we can fill this in. I'm assuming that's correct.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And my second question is just a point of clarification to make sure I understand is the reason it's before us is if we act now, then the whole construction process goes on, and if we delay it for a year, then we're going to incur costs and delay other issues. Is that not kind of correct?
I think, maybe you want to answer the second one.
Let me speak to the second one if I could. The reason to act now is to provide us the certainty going into the negotiations for those parcels of land. With the sure knowledge that those properties would have available to them water and sewer, we're able to go uniformly throughout those negotiations and say your needs will be met. We have several properties that we are confronting that if we don't have that availability of water and sewer, we're very likely to be in a position where we'd have to do full takings of those properties because we will have essentially cut off any use of their property. So you're looking at a cost to the state of something in excess of $1.5 million. Additional acquisition costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Klein. I think we're going to hear from the department, and so we'll expect to see you back for a work session at some point in the future.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'd like to invite Bob Rindy and Darren Nichols up from DLCD.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation, and with me today is Darren Nichols, a manager of our Regional Services Division. I am aware that there's more amendments, and we have been actually talking with the Senator Edwards and others about those, so we know conceptually what those are. We're here today to talk about what we think is going to be in those and what some of our issues are. Mr. Nichols has been closely involved in working with the city in this issue and the issues preceding this with the UGB expansion for Junction City. So I asked him to come down and speak to you especially about his knowledge on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, Darren Nichols, I manage the Community Services Division at the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development. I want to start by saying that we understand the situation that the city is in trying to provide services to the Department of Corrections and Human Services facilities, and we support the effort that's gone on. It's actually a multi-year effort in which our department, the governor's office, the city, the county, property owners, and other agencies have been working very closely together to make this a success, and I think this is just one more step in that process. Senator Edwards mentioned that state law permits the city and county to work together to take an exception to Goal 11, enabling these properties to hook up. That exception is put in the state law specifically to address situations like this that aren't clear-cut urban-rural issues, but it recognizes in the law that in some instances it makes sense to permit properties to hook up to sewer for a variety of reasons, including health hazards or existing development that's already there. I think this is one of those situations that we recognize fits the intent of a goal to exception to Goal 11 to provide public facilities and services outside of the urban growth boundary to these properties. It's largely an issue of timing. If we'd been aware of this issue earlier, if the city had raised it earlier in the process or recognized this earlier, I think it's something that we could have had addressed already. That's just a process of the world that we live in. We don't have time to address it. I would say, though, that this department Lane County and the city have made a significant commitment to expedite hearings at the county level to move an exception forward. I have dedicated two of my staff members specifically to help the city write the exception and to present that to Lane County in a way that enables the city, the county, the property owners, other interests in the local region to address whatever other kind of issues may need to be addressed through the process. And so I'm really pleased that the parties have made that kind of commitment to make this happen sooner. I don't remember the exact date, but the hearings at Lane County are scheduled for early March. I expect that those can be completed by the end of April, adopted sometime in May and June, which I believe meets the city's construction timelines. I think the advantage there is that it gives the locals a chance to work out any other kind of issues that need to be addressed at the local level. It gives local decision makers a chance to address those. The way I would characterize this bill is that it is essentially a belt and suspenders approach. If for some reason the exceptions process was to go sideways, and again, we have complete support at the local level, even from local elected officials, I think it's going to be a success. If for some reason things went sideways, this bill would provide some assurance to property owners that they will eventually be able to hook up, which would enable them then to negotiate with the city in conveying right-of-way or easements or whatever it is that the city needs. So that said, there's a couple of provisions in the bill that I think need to be worked on. We've discussed those with Senator Edwards and at the city. Some wordsmithing that, to be clear what this bill allows or does not allow as far as additional development on the ground. Again, I think those are the kind of things that are best addressed through the exceptions process at the local level because it's more flexible than, in some ways, than a legislative bill. On the other hand, we understand the timing and sort of the urgency here to provide assurances. What I would say is that we will work with Senator Edwards and whoever needs to be included to address these assurances in the bill if need be.
All right, thank you. There any questions or would like to add anything, Bob?
I would add one thing. I want to point out that our Director Whitman met yesterday by phone with Senator Edwards, and we've conveyed these issues that we have, and we have some agreement on future language, one of which would be a sunset provision. We wouldn't need this if indeed the exceptions process is successful, which we highly anticipate. The second thing is that there is no need for the bill to address water since our program doesn't disallow the water. There's no need to have that provision in the bill. So those are the two main things, just to give you a heads up on some of those amendments.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Brzezinski?
Thank you. Clarification regarding the exception process. What I think I heard was that all of this can be done guaranteed within 120 days or less.
So I can't speak for the local governments. These are local land use hearings.
Right.
The time frame starting in March, with the initial hearing in March, Lane County should be able to have that accomplished in less than 120 days. I don't remember exactly what their time frame is, but it's a matter of just getting this on their docket and getting it done, which they've made a commitment to do.
All right. Follow up. Yes. In 1995, the legislature gave authority for siting of prisons called super siting. Does that have any impact as to making sure these facilities actually get the infrastructure that they need?
So I'm not an expert on supersiding, but I have read that bill recently, or that provision of statute. My understanding is that it would, if Department of Corrections was to take that route. They have not chosen to do that. It would require Department of Corrections sort of taking that avenue and then a signature of support from the governor. The Department of Corrections, to my knowledge, has not taken that route. They've chosen to work with the local governments until this point, as have the other agencies in the governor's office, to resolve this outside of the supersiding authority provided in statute.
Just want that on the record. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Okay. Senator Roquist? All right. Well, we will look forward to working with you as we get the third amendment. I'm assuming that we'll be hearing any comments on that. And thank you for working very closely with Senator Edwards and the committee staff. We appreciate that. And we'll look forward to probably seeing you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill, Senate Bill 1022?
Madam Chair. I'd like to have Mr. Kyler come up.
Senator Przanski is requesting the
sorry to do this.
City of Eugene. Is it city? Is Lane County or
County.
City of Eugene? Okay. Hi, Alex.
Alex, sorry to
Alex without Kyler.
we've heard testimony. Counties seems to be on board.
And you are with?
Forward.
Alex Kyler, Lane County Intergovernmental Relations Manager.
Okay.
Basically, what the representation of the county is ready to move forward on the hearings and start this process, and everyone seems to be working in that on that path of success for getting this done.
Absolutely. I brought this measure in front of the board last week for discussion, and really their only concern with the bill is that they don't want it to necessarily usurp the local process. They'd like the local process to play out. County's got the proper authority to go that route, and that's their concern, is that the state doesn't usurp, of course, the
don't
the
use
local
the superciding. Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. Okay. Anybody else like to testify in 1022? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1022, and we will wait until we have those amendments back. And our last bill today is Senate Bill 1009. We'll open up a public hearing on that. Beth?
Senate Bill 1009 would prohibit the use of plastic bags as checkout bags in Oregon effective January 1st, 2012. The bill defines checkout bag and reusable bag and authorizes the Environmental Quality Commission to impose civil penalties on persons who violate the prohibition.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Haas, this bill it has your name on it, doesn't it? So would you like to talk about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have some brief comments and some snapshots, but I do want to say before we start that
it has your name on it too.
In this state, we have an ethic of taking care of our environment. It's one of the reasons I got into the legislature, and Oregon is seen, for better or worse, around the country, I think even around the world, as being one of the leaders of protecting our environment. And so it's in that spirit that this bill is coming forward. I must say that it's very heartening to have been working for more than a year on this bill with people who have skin in this game, the grocers, recyclers, retailers, and that it has been very positive, and we've established some common ground, and that common ground is that these plastic bags are a problem. They're a huge problem to our environment, and that this requires a solution and people working together in good faith to try to fix this problem. This bill is a ban, and there may be better ways to skin this cat. I don't know, but this is where we're starting, and I think it makes sense. I have some pictures, if we can turn the lights down and turn the projector up. And I want to walk you through the bill as well. All the pictures that I have on this slide, by the way, are from Oregon. I'm not showing you pictures of India or Bangladesh or anything else. But plastic bags are bad for wildlife. Sea turtles, marine animals die from eating these discarded plastic bags and mistaken for food. Turtles think the bags are jellyfish, their primary food source. We're an ocean state, and these bags do make their way from the countryside to the beaches to the ocean. And if you ask anyone who's ever been in one of those Solve beach cleanups, they'll tell you plastic bags are a huge litter problem. They're a problem on the Willamette River. These pictures were taken today. I went for a run along the Willamette early this morning. It was a great day until you got close. But these were pictures taken in between Oregon City and Portland by the Willamette Riverkeeper. And they're everywhere. The biggest problem is you can't kill them. They have a shelf life of more than 100 years, and therefore the irony here is the very thing that makes them convenient is what makes them difficult to recycle. Is they're very strong and durable, and they're made out of petrochemicals, and they're almost impossible to recycle. For practical purposes, they're not being recycled anywhere in this country. It just doesn't work. They're lightweight, they blow away, and they break down in a landfill into tiny bits, contaminating soil and water. I thought we were trying to get away from this, get away from oil-based material. I mean, I thought that was a national priority that we had. But this is where plastic bags come from. And in fact, Specifically in Oregon, we used enough plastic bags in 2008 that required 150,000 barrels of oil. That's not a global figure. That's what we did here in this state. Consumers, I know that some consumers that I've heard a lot from in the last 24 hours are not all there yet. I think that not all of them understand the environmental ramifications, and I can tell you something else. Those are the house dogs, and to our household, plastic bags are sometimes essential. And a lot of people know what I'm talking about here. We did get a contraption from the pet store a few weeks ago that I think will work better. The bill itself is a ban. It's got an emergency clause. It will go into effect in 2012. There will be civil penalties in rules that haven't been written yet. But I do believe the people in this room, and particularly the industry folks who have come to this common ground, agree that there is a fix to this problem. And I do believe that if we work together, we have an Oregon solution. There are experts here on all sides of this with skin in the game who I think can provide some expert testimony.
Great. Thank you, Senator Haas. Senator Atkinson, would you like to say a few words?
Certainly. Just a few.
You're the co-sponsor on this.
Just a few comments. I think this is a very interesting opportunity for us to start a discussion. Several years ago, this body worked with me and kind of yawned at the thought of doing river recycling on rivers. And we passed a bill called Keep Oregon Rivers Clean. And we did it on six rivers. And people who weren't too familiar with rivers kind of didn't understand or didn't think it was all that important. And then 2 years later, it went so well, we took it statewide. And it's just flourished. And we've got a tremendous amount of fluorocarbon and monofilament and lead out of the rivers. This is interesting. My interest in this stems before I knew Senator Haas was working on it, but traveling quite a bit in the third world where this is a major problem, blowing everywhere and stuck everywhere and in water sources everywhere. When Senator Haas approached me on it, I thought that this was a great opportunity to get the folks, as he said, with skin in the game involved. I also think there's an interest in brown bags as they relate to our timber industry, which has implications here. And I think this is a fantastic discussion to get started. So I won't say anything more other than I'll be very curious to see how far we can take this.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, with that, then we have a lot of people that would like to testify on this bill, so I'll just start calling you up and down the list. First, we have Palmer Mason from the Department of Environmental Quality and Rick Winterhalter, Association of Oregon Recyclers. And I'm just going to call up folks panel by panel. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're on the same side of the issue, but I'm just calling you up as you've written, signed up. Okay, Palmer, can you get started?
My name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality, and thank you, Chair Dingfelder, and members of the committee for letting me speak to this bill. I want to start by saying that I think that Senator Haas has identified an important issue. Plastic bags do cause environmental problems, and we should try to look for solutions that address those problems and the issues around plastic bags. I think the point of my testimony today is maybe to bring to the committee's attention some of the issues that are out there that ought to be explored in this conversation and discussed, and we're certainly interested and willing to be at the table to work towards a solution. So with those remarks, I'll start from what Sue should be passing out.
Yeah, we have a copy.
Okay. I'll skip over the key provisions and just talk about the effect of the legislation. As we read the bill, we think that there's a likelihood that it would lead to a decrease in plastic bags. That should be no surprise, I guess, and an increase in paper bags. There are some positive things about the bill in terms of helping the material recovery facilities better sort the recyclables that come through their infrastructure. Right now, plastic bags are a problem in that they tie up the machines. Those facilities have to slow down, clear out the bags, and that just slows their ability to recycle as well as to just get the contamination leads to bad diversion of recyclables. Senator Haas pointed out that there's a real problem with plastic bags in terms of litter, certainly in rivers and other waterways, but especially in the marine environment. Plastic bags are a real problem. The last point is an interesting one, the last bullet here that I want to talk about, because this is where the environmental issues and the environmental effects get a little less clear. And it's what happens with greenhouse gas emissions and those type of issues. If the bill leads to an increase in paper bags, there is a possibility, based on the research that we've seen, and I'm going to give you some major caveats about that research, but there's a possibility based on that research that there could be an increase in greenhouse gas emissions. Now, you have to acknowledge some of the other benefits of the bill that Senator Hass is proposing. He's talking about a bill that would help reduce litter, again, especially in the marine environment. That's an important public policy issue. A second point is helping the MRFs recover recyclables. And actually, we have a problem with greenhouse emissions in that if the MRFs aren't recovering recyclables at the rate they could, there's a lost opportunity to recover that material, and therefore we have increased greenhouse emissions because of that. So I want to put those caveats out there and acknowledge those. But if you talk about the paper versus plastic discussion, the life cycle analysis that our staff have reviewed and read, and they're not, I would say, the best life cycle analysis in the world, because some of them are dated. Some of them didn't precisely go into comparison, a good comparison between plastic and paper bags. But based on what we're seeing, there is a chance that you could have greenhouse gas emissions through increased use of paper bags. So the department feels like we should put this information out to the committee. It should be a part of the discussion that we have on this bill. And that was my primary purpose in bringing this information to the committee's attention. But I want to emphasize that we're very interested in being at the table and working on this bill, and think that Senator Hass has raised some good issues. I'll just flip quickly over to the back and talk about there is a fiscal impact with this bill that I just want to put out on the record. And it results from the fact that the bill would likely require the department to do rulemaking. We feel like we would have to define what a plastic bag is. That may seem counterintuitive. I think we all have an idea of what plastic bags are, but plastic bags are often made of different materials. As Senator Hass pointed out, they're often made from petroleum products, and that raises a public policy issue. But they're also sometimes made from corn starches and other organic materials in an attempt to make the bags more biodegradable. I think the evidence is that they may not always biodegrade very quickly, even with those blends. But we would nonetheless, we'd have to define what a plastic bag is. So that would be one rulemaking issue. A second one is the bill allows the department, with working with the stakeholders, to define alternatives to plastic bags as checkout bags, and that would likely require some rulemaking. Another issue for us in terms of fiscal impact would be education and outreach. You can see there on my points, we'd be talking about notification to retailers of the ban and trying to explain to retailers what their alternatives are for meeting the law. And then there would be some issues regarding enforcement and compliance, and responding to complaints and trying to deal with enforcement issues as necessary. So I just want to make the committee aware of the fiscal impact. I don't think that any of these things are insurmountable, whether we're talking the fiscal impact or even the issues that we raise. We would certainly be willing and eager to try to work with Senator Hass on dealing with those things. And thank you. I can take any questions.
Any questions for the department? Senator Boquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You talked about the greenhouse gas impact. Can you give me an estimate or get back with me on the impact of burning 150,000 barrels of fuel in the state of Oregon versus that? The second one is, have you looked into, follow-up question for later, how much have you looked into what the greenhouse gas impact is that's spent on litter pickup of plastic products along the sides of the roads, i.e. trucks, ODOT times, so on and so forth like that? And I'd be real curious to see your backup data on the whole greenhouse gas, one versus the other. I think there may be components that, as you said, in a quick review that haven't been brought into perspective, because plastic comes from heavy crude, which has a larger burn than what a light crude does, so therefore its negative impact of getting rid of 150,000 barrels may be a positive impact.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If I may, mm-hmm. Chair Dingfelder, thank you, Senator Boquist. We'll try to get you information on all these. I don't know that we have
information on every one of those questions, but we'll do our best. And one last comment. The whole issue about greenhouse gases and what's better, is it paper, is it plastic, is far from clear-cut. So I don't want to suggest that even if the bill does lead to an increase in paper, that automatically means that there's an increase in greenhouse gas emissions, and even that the evidence would totally show that. We can't really say that. It just, based on what we've seen and what we've read, it tends to suggest that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hess?
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. This notion of, I've heard a couple of times now that paper bags have an environmental footprint too, so therefore they're bad too, and maybe we just shouldn't do anything. I just can't go there. If you, maybe 10, 15 years ago, the Portland area banned styrofoam cups. And if you follow that same logic, then we should allow styrofoam cups to come back and use those again because, you know, of the very same logic. So to suggest that they have an environmental footprint and therefore we shouldn't do anything with plastic bags just is a flawed premise. So plus, I don't think the evidence or the research is there to say that the environmental footprint of plastic bags is worse than the environmental damage. The environmental threat from paper bags is worse than the environmental damage of plastic bags. Madam Chair, if I could, I want to make one point on the on the bill. There are some things that are exempt in this bill, some practical things, produce bags in stores, meat bags, hot meal bags in restaurants, things that are just practical, keep hot liquids from leaking out. So,
okay.
Some practical considerations.
Great. Any other questions for the department before we go on to Rick? Okay, thank you, Palmer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
thank you very much for
allowing me to be here. My name is Rick Winterhalter. I'm the current board of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. We certainly have an interest here, and I think Mr. Murray is going to follow me and really illustrate some of the problems that Senator Haas has brought forward. Frankly, for our entire membership, collectors, governments, processors, mills, individuals, making this state the number one recycling state in the nation, they're just frustrating. I mean, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years asking the public not to put these bags in the curbside bin, yet there they are, mucking up the works and causing an undue expense at the processors and, unfortunately, preventing the recyclables that we've asked people to put in those bins from getting to the intended markets, which is, you know, our goal. And one of the things about this bill that seems real important, I think, for our membership is that the recycling system in Oregon is inextricably linked across the state, and that's why we're really pleased to see it here instead of, you know, looking for a statewide solution is far superior than a city-by-city approach, and so we're really thankful for that. And we certainly appreciate, I think, the retailers' efforts to sell and to promote the reusable bags and all of the efforts that they've put forward. And, I mean, how many times have we appreciated that little reminder at the door, go back to your car and get your bags, you know, they're there, you know, and bring them back in. And so we believe this multi-use bag is really on the way to a solution. And so, I mean, we just, members, we don't really recall a time when consumers set up a hue of cry of help, can't get my purchases to the retailer from the retailer to home without a plastic bag. And I don't really recall a time when there was any loss in profits that were attributed to the choice of product conveyance by the retailers. But I do recall a time when plastic bags were not such a presence in the litter that's been pointed out in the beaches, on the roads of beaches. And I do remember when curbside bins were fairly free of plastic bags. So association certainly is prepared to work with the senator and other members of the committee on finding a solution towards increasing the recycling opportunities for all Oregonians. So thank you very much.
Okay. Questions for Rick? Rick, I do have one question before
sure.
you go.
Of course.
There was, and I'm not sure if some of the retailers were offering recycling in their stores. I don't recall if I've seen bins lately, if that's still going on. Can you talk a little bit about effectiveness of those programs where customers can bring their plastic bags back to, say, Fred Meyer's or Safeway to recycle those bags? If you have any thoughts on that, that would take it out of the waste stream so the commingling is not as big of a problem.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think there are some experts behind me that can really speak to that. But anecdotally, yes, I mean, I see the bag recycling in the stores available, and I see them being used. So beyond that, I don't have much. I think some others will speak to that.
And does DEQ have any data on the effectiveness of those programs and how much is being diverted from the waste stream?
Chair Dingfelder, I'm not sure that we do. I will certainly go back and ask. My understanding is that there are retailers who do offer that, but as how effective it is, I'm not really sure. But anecdotally, you know, it's one less or so many fewer bags in the stream, and that's probably a good thing, as well as fewer bags in the environment. So I think it's a positive, but we'll try to quantify that as much as we can.
I was going to say that would be helpful to find out if I can't imagine that the retailers aren't tracking it. Sharing that information with you, it would be helpful to have that. Great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Tim Shestek, Sean Miller, and Gus Gates. Okay. Tim, are you from out of town?
I am, yes.
Would you like to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Tim Shestek with the American Chemistry Council. My organization is a National Trade Association of Raw Material Manufacturers. I do have a small segment of manufacturers who do produce plastic retail bags. And in the spirit of this discussion, I would say that we agree with Senator Haas that there ought to be efforts underway to reduce the amount of plastic bag litter and disposal. But in our view, the approach taken in SB 1009 falls short in a couple of areas. One, recognizing that the plastic bags are fully recyclable, and we can debate over the issue of life cycle of bags, paper versus plastic, and I don't think that's necessarily important to point out, other than that there are, in fact, environmental trade-offs when you shift consumer use from bags, from plastic bags to paper. But let me first talk briefly about the recycling front. Our information shows that over 832 million pounds of plastic bags and wraps were recycled in 2008, a 27% increase in the volume of that material over the last couple of years.
And that's nationwide?
That's a national figure, that's correct.
Do you have any Oregon data?
I do not at this point, no. Those products that we're talking about aren't just grocery bags. They're also wraps that you might find, paper towels that you would purchase at the grocery store, dry cleaning bags, the produce bag in Senator Haas's bill also included in terms of that kind of recycling number. Most major grocers, we talked about earlier, discussion earlier, either mandated by law or voluntarily, California is one of the few states that has a mandatory requirement that large retailers and grocers have in-store recycling bins available to consumers so they can bring those materials back to the store for recycling purposes. Most major stores do have those that infrastructure in place. And what we've seen in terms of some of the experience of jurisdictions that have prohibited plastic bags, primarily San Francisco is a good example, the infrastructure has started to disappear. So consumers who had local opportunities to recycle these products through drop-off programs, which, by the way, we think is the most appropriate mechanism in which to handle this material. So we avoid some of the situations that we see at these MRF operations where bags are causing problems. We're seeing that recycling infrastructure disappear when a jurisdiction elects to prohibit the use of plastic bags. So you have that kind of unintended consequence, if you will. I would point out you also have situations in which there are environmental trade-offs associated with an increased use of paper. San Francisco is another good example where consumers have seen an uptick in folks using reusable bags, but primarily most grocery stores, most retailers, and most consumers have elected to use paper bags. Our life cycle analysis show, and some of the other life cycle analyses that we have seen, indicate that it's 70% more energy to manufacture paper bags. You need 7 trucks to deliver an amount of paper bags, as you only need 1 truck to deliver the same amount of plastic bags. So these are some of the environmental trade-offs, if you will, that we would see occur if the state of Oregon were to enact a prohibition like this. My organization is involved in a number of jurisdictions, California, King County, Washington, Philadelphia, Lake County, Illinois, a variety of programs, both mandatory and voluntary, to help increase the infrastructure to recycle these products through public education efforts, working with nonprofits, recyclers, other stakeholders, to develop the infrastructure that makes sense environmentally and economically. A ban on bags, at least on plastic bags, is going to increase consumer costs in our view. We've seen some data most recently reported in San Francisco that one grocery store chain in San Francisco has seen its operating costs increase $900,000. That's a significant amount of money. We think there's a better way to go about addressing this problem. I won't profess to say that there isn't a problem. There definitely is one, but there's a better way to go about doing that, and that's, in our view, an effort to increase the recycling of these products so they can be used as feedstock to make new products, bags, plastic pipe, decking, and other materials. So with that, we would like to work with you, Senator Haas, on developing a program that makes sense from the environmental standpoint and from the economic standpoint. So thank you.
Thank you.
Sean? We'll go through and then,
yeah. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. And I want to say just for the record that we believe Senate Bill 1009 creates a platform for a constructive discussion on the best policy to reduce consumer reliance on disposable bags. There is no silver bullet in the terms of the best bag for consumers. And Madam Chair, I'd like to direct your attention to the Table 1, where we've identified the bag type from paper, plastic, compostable, and reusable, and we compare the source of the bag, the performance of the bag as it relates to the consumer, the cost, whether it's reusable, whether it's recyclable, its greenhouse gas impact, and its litter impact. And as you can see from the chart, there is pros and cons for every one of them. But after weighing the pros and cons of each type of readily available and affordable bag options, NWGA established a bag policy with the following tenets. We are committed to moving as many consumers as possible to reusable bags. Any regulatory policy needs to be a statewide policy to mitigate impacts on retailers, consumers, and local government enforcement efforts. And the third, any regulatory policy should affect all businesses that provide plastic bags to consumers, the same way the current statute on providing paper and plastic applies. And this is to not give someone a competitive advantage over another. And within the third tenet, obviously we want to have a discussion on certain exceptions, like other cities that have passed these types of ordinances. For the last 3 years, retail members of the NWGA have been leading the way to moving consumers away from paper and plastic bags to reusable bags. Three key tools have been used to decrease the impact on disposable bags. Visible signage outside the store reminding consumers to remember their reusable bags. Most people forget them in the car before they get into the store, so that reminder is very helpful. Making reusable bags available for sale and immediate use in visible and convenient areas. Our grocers have been doing a fabulous effort. They're all around the check stands as you're in the store. And then the third is providing recycling containers for the collection of plastic bags in visible and convenient areas. To answer Senator Dingfelder's question, we are providing those recycling bins. The result has been the sale of nearly 10 million reusable bags, a 400% increase in the use of reusable bags, with nearly 10% of the transactions using a reusable bag. But this is only a start. Our biggest challenge is human nature. Whatever a statewide policy we devise, we must change the habits of the consumer. What this means is that the consumer must buy into the solution and willingly accept it. NWGA has looked at the range of habit changers and would propose the following. In the first stage, we would create a statewide incentive standard. We don't want to preempt local control in the reusable bag effort, but it is critical that a single set of standards guide the process. NWGA believes the state should adopt a safe harbor approach as the first stage of the bag policy. The policy would allow any local agency within their current authority to ban or tax disposable bags if any retailer that provides the bag at a point of sale does not qualify under the following safe harbor standards. These standards would be very similar to what has been our effort has been going on thus far, and that is to provide the signage outside the store, providing the reusable bag at the point of sale at the counter, and providing a recycling container for the collection of plastic bags in a visible and convenient area. If a retailer qualifies under this safe harbor standard, the retailer would be exempt from the local regulations. In the second stage, we learned several things during the Seattle bag effort last year. NWGA was neutral on the issue and continued to work with the city on solutions to reducing the use of disposable bags. But during that campaign, unexpected opponents became vocal with the opposition to the tax. Without solicitation, food banks, low-income, and fixed-income people became active against the tax. And their main points of contention were they could not afford to purchase the reusable bags. They prefer plastic as they reuse them for household purposes, garbage liners, storage, Senator Hass's dog, and thereby cutting the cost of purchasing alternatives. Thanks, Ted. And the last is durability on public transportation. And these constituencies did not offer alternatives to the tax, but they did change public sentiment to keep the status quo. As we go forward, the issue of these constituencies will need to be addressed. In conclusion, the grocery industry is not married to paper or plastic bags. If we could blink and have all our customers using reusable, we would. But this is a formidable task in changing customer habits and affordability. We will continue to perfect our methods and experiment. In fact, one Hawthorne area Portland retailer has experimented with banning all disposable bags and offering reusable bags and boxes. This has met with limited success so far, but the experiment goes on to determine if it could be made to work. If you are to move a bill this session, we believe our concept above would be the most effective start to achieving our common goal. And thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Well, we're going to hear from Mr. Gates first, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair Dingfelder, and members of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Gus Gates, and I'm the Oregon Policy Coordinator with the Surfrider Foundation, and I'm a lifelong coastal resident from the community of Florence. On behalf of 600 Surfrider Foundation members in Oregon, and as well as our Portland, Newport, and CITES Law chapters, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of Senate Bill 1009, a bill banning single-use plastic bag grocery bags here in Oregon. The Surfrider Foundation, so Oregon chapters, are very supportive of this effort, as this issue has been the focus of our Rise Above Plastics initiatives over the past 3 years. This initiative has focused on raising awareness through public education about the impacts that single-use plastic bags have on the environment, especially the marine ecosystem. The Portland chapter has been working towards creating a ban on single-use plastic bags in the city of Portland and has built a coalition of businesses and organizations that support this effort, as well as collecting over 5,000 signatures via petition. Oregon chapters have also been conducting beach cleanups for the past 10 years, and last year we partnered with Solve to distribute over 2,000 reusable bags to the volunteers that participated, such as this. Surfrider's interest in supporting Senate Bill 1009 stems from our mission to preserve the health of our oceans and the quality of our beaches. Plastic bags that end up in the ocean and on our coastlines not only endanger seabirds and marine mammals, they adversely affect the entire marine food web. Because plastic does not biodegrade, plastic waste never truly disappears. It only breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces of plastic through a process called photodegradation. In the ocean, these small plastic particles are mistaken for food by filter feeders. Although plastics cannot be digested, they concentrate organic chemicals and environmental pollutants and bioaccumulate as they work their way up the food chain. In addition to harming the environment, plastic bags also harm our wallets. Everyone bears the cost for these quote-unquote free plastic bags. Taxpayers spend as much as 17 cents for each free plastic bag they receive because they subsidize the recycling, collection, and disposal of these plastic bags. Retailers spend as much as 5 cents every time they provide a consumer with a said free bag. States, cities, and counties together spend about $4.41 per capita per year on general litter abatement. This is a large issue, as Senator Hass and others have stated. There is ample precedent to support a ban on single-use plastic bags. Governments worldwide have successfully reduced plastic bag use, either through fees, taxes, or outright bans. Maui and Kauai County, San Francisco, Manhattan Beach, Malibu, Los Angeles, California, Edmonds, Washington, Outer Banks, North Carolina, the District of Columbia, Mexico City, Rio de Janeiro, Mumbai, Ireland, China, Tanzania, Taiwan, Australia, Italy, and South Africa have all taken measures to reduce their single-use plastic bag usage for one reason or another. If these places can do it, Oregon should reaffirm its legacy as an environmental leader and become the first state in the U.S. to create an outright ban on single-use plastic bags. The clock's ticking on our sesquicentennial, and what do we want our environmental legacy to be? We've got a few days left. There's an opportunity to be significant leaders in this short legislative session. So, in short, we're seeking a policy change to reduce the use of single-use plastic bags, not to replace them with paper. We've got clear alternatives that work, and we can create jobs here in Oregon doing so. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and thank you to Senator Atkinson and Senator Haas for championing this important issue.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for members of this panel? Senator Przanski?
I have two. One, is it Tim?
Correct.
In your presentation, you were talking about the MRFs, and maybe I misunderstood. I heard the part about recognizing the problem that plastic bags have in the operation, but then I thought you shifted to paper and something in conjunction with the MRFs, and I missed that if you were referring to paper.
No, I wasn't. The point I was trying to get across was that we recognize that loose bags that do get into the MRF operations cause problems in terms of the machinery, and our efforts have been focused on trying to create an infrastructure where consumers can bring bags back to the stores and other outlets, so that material doesn't end up in a MRF. It's in a much more clean recycling infrastructure.
That's my mistake on it. And then, Sean, on this table one, on the reusable, the source, it says recycled PET plastic. Why isn't what I would call cloth bags not being considered as usable? I know in our household, the majority of our bags that we would use are fabric. And I'm wondering if the organization has looked at that as a alternative usable bag that would actually have a longer lifespan than what is shown for the recycled PET plastics.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, I believe that is the bag you're referring to, the recycled, yeah. Reusable bag.
This chart tells me that it's been classified to be a reusable bag. It has to be made out of recycled PET plastic.
I'll check on that. I think,
what I'm saying is I know what we use are just actual fiber cloth bags, cotton, that are used, and they seem to last for years.
Or perhaps hemp?
Hemp would be another one.
I'm with you.
I'll check on this.
Yeah.
Although we can't grow it here, but yes.
Well, won't be long.
Okay. I know Senator Atkinson had a question, and Senator...
Thank you. Mr. Miller,
Boquist.
I'm very interested, and I think it'd be very important to further describe the Safe Harbor program, and I think if you could relate how the industry handled the safe harbor type of incentive base rather than a club of a ban when it related to the legislation of a shopping cart.
Yes.
Maybe you could go through that. I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, the safe harbor approach is essentially requiring a retailer to come up with a criteria of things that they have to do. And the things that we've come up with are the signage, the providing the reusable bag, and the recycling effort. And one of the things that, once you provide those items, a local government, basically would not be able to do anything above what we would be doing as required by state law. However, many folks, don't do these things, and they would be subject to essentially any local ordinance, whether it's a ban, whether it's a tax, whether it's a fee, that would be required at that point. What's very important for us is to develop whatever the statewide approach is, that we are able to comply and not have to have on top of it a patchwork approach. Again, when a lot of these discussions have happened in other states, other countries, there's bans, there's taxes or fees on the bag. Sometimes it applies to plastic. Sometimes it applies to plastic and paper. And what we cannot accept is a patchwork where every city in the state of Oregon has something different, whether it's a ban or a tax or a fee. And so one of the things that we have tried to develop, and we've done it in our shopping cart ordinance, which is actually a very successful program working with local governments, is as long as we are doing our part in trying to, again, what we've discovered is trying to change the habits of consumers to the reusable bag, which we've have deemed as the most the best option, the most viable option to move to, then we would not have to have this patchwork approach across the states. And so that's how it relates to something we have already done in the legislature, working with local governments, and we've done it on the side of shopping carts. And so if there's any more to elaborate on that, I'm happy to, but it's worked there, and we're hopeful it works here. It'll just take a little time. I think what we've discovered in some of our experiments, like in the Portland area, where we've tried to just all out, not give plastic bags out and ban it in, voluntarily in the stores, is people do want the plastic bag. They're used to it. And so we have to change that behavior. And we're doing our best, and again, we have a good start. We think we can do more in this effort and encourage those folks to move over to the reusable bag.
Okay. Senator Boquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim, I'm sure you don't have it off the top of your head, but if you could maybe email me. I'm curious as to, either from your organization, what you might know of where are all these bags produced. I mean, how many manufacturers do we have inside the United States versus importers? And I do see that we have multiple technologies. I'm familiar with the old third world heavy crude version, but it also says here you do this out of liquid petroleum. So I'm kind of curious where these plants are and where's the base product come from.
Okay, I will. I'll put that together. Yes.
Right, and you can send that to the committee administrator to Beth because she'll make sure that all the members get that.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Senator House.
And thank you. On that same note, I was wondering if you could provide us with a list of people in your organization, or if you could tell us who some of the companies are, or
sure.
Are the companies we've heard of, and are any of them Oregon-based?
I do not have any members of manufacturing bags in Oregon. I know there are some companies here that do make bags. Whether they would fall into the scope of this particular bill, I'm unclear. We represent about 80% of the retail bag production capacity. Most of those are made here domestically, but I'll be sure to get that specific information to the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, while we're asking about where bags are made, I'd be curious maybe if our committee administrator could look into how many Oregon jobs make paper bags. That would be I'd be very curious to know. Thank you.
And just to, as we're piling things up here, I have one more, which is where are the plastic bags are recycled if they're done here domestically or if they're shipped abroad? Because certainly having worked for many, many years on the electronic waste recycling bill, learned a lot about offshore recyclers, so certainly like to know, and if that is factored in as part of the life cycle cost of the bag. When you're looking at doing a life cycle analysis, plastic versus paper, if the recycling efforts are factored in.
Okay. We'll put that information together.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
We'll look forward to hearing back from on those homework assignments. Okay, next we have Travis Williams, Sue Marshall, and Bill Perry. Okay, why don't we start down on this end this time? Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association. I just wanted to point out a few specific things, and I've touched base with Senator Hass on these. I appreciate him approaching me beforehand. I do think there are a few things unique to our industry. I would agree with some of the previous speakers. A statewide standard, I think, is vitally necessary. As far as retail goes and everything else, I think the standard has to be unified across the state. Second, as we talked talk about safe harbor rules and some of the other things, I cannot do a reusable bag because I'm not able to accept where I prepare food over the counter anything from the customer besides money. There's a specific exemption for money. So reusable bag situation under our current rules and standards will not work in our industry. And second, as far as it relates to drive-throughs, paper bags do create some issues, obviously, with their strength and others because, obviously, our prepared food is not as badly packaged as packaged food. Some of the quick service operators have had to go away because they've had issues with bags breaking, spilling, that kind of stuff. So there are things specifically as it relates to restaurants that make the standards in these and different versions we've talked about problematic in our industry. We are, obviously, a lot of our members didn't go to plastic bags until they became recyclable. They stayed with paper as long as possible. So, I mean, I do think they're sympathetic to the issues you want to address here. But there are some things as it relates to a difference between restaurants and grocery stores that are going to be problematic as we just deal with reusable bags as your goal. So I just wanted those on the record, and I'd be happy to answer questions. So.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Sue? Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today representing Tualatin River Keepers, Portland Audubon Society, and the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, all enthusiastically supportive of this bill. The primary concern that these organizations have is that these bags are consumed in large quantities. They persist in the environment. Often they end up in our waterways, sometimes well beyond the point of origin. They impact aquatic species and wildlife. Many of the river keepers and Trout Unlimited have volunteer stewardship programs, and a lot of the time is used in removing plastic bags from up in the trees. Many of the pictures that you showed we're familiar with to remove these things from the environment. There's a lot to be done to restore our waterways, and I think our time might be better spent in planting trees along the streams. We all agree that a statewide approach is the best approach. Tualatin River Keepers suggest considering a nominal fee on paper bags to serve as a disincentive to use paper bags, and possibly some of that revenue could be used to offset startup costs for a program. I think rather than debating the carbon footprint, I think the plastic bags stand on their own in terms of having an environmental impact that should be addressed, and we'd be very happy as this progresses in this special session to work on any potential amendments. So thank you very much for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Travis?
Chair Gingfelder and committee members.
You have the mic.
My name is Travis Williams, and I'm executive director at Riverkeeper for Willamette Riverkeeper. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to share my views on Senate Bill 1009. We fully support this effort to eliminate the use of plastic bags. While there are certainly other forms of overuse and pollution related to our society's retail stores and overall rate of consumption, this effort is a good way to start addressing a very clear problem. I've traveled a lot of Oregon rivers over the years, and certainly the Willamette, many of its tributaries, but you know, I can tell you from firsthand experience, whether you're on the wild and scenic section of the Grand Ronde, or you're on the John Day River, or you're in the Lower Columbia, or anywhere in the Willamette system, these bags are simply everywhere. It's not a stretch to say that. So I'm just reiterating something I think we all know, and I know some of the other folks in the room have made the point that they get this. I would pose that sometimes it is worth making something pretty simple and just banning something because it has such an impact. If you think about all of the rivers that flow into the Pacific from the state of Oregon, Columbia, on down south, and the mass of plastic that could well be involved in that significant flow, we're making a definite contribution to a problem that has been well documented in recent years in the Pacific Ocean. I mean, in the water column, micro-sized bits of plastic from a variety of sources, but certainly from plastic bags, It's ubiquitous in many areas, and frankly, it's sickening, and I hope that all of us have had a chance to look at some of those documentaries, because the cameras in this case really don't lie. So the question back here in Oregon is, how do we make a difference, and is it worth sticking our necks out a little bit, as I think Senator Hass and Senator Atkinson have done by introducing this bill, to say, hey, you know what, we can live without plastic bags that are handed over so freely at every store, from a Plaid pantry to a 7-Eleven to your larger stores and chains. And it takes a while to make the transformation, but you can get these bags. Again, we all know it. They're available. I think even people on a lower fixed income over time can figure out how to incorporate reusable bags. These things are tough. I can't tell you how many times personally I've ridden my bike or walked back and forth to the store with huge masses of groceries and bags just like this. You know, there's other homegrown alternatives. This is a cornstarch sack that Willamette Riverkeeper used last fall to do a river cleanup. This happened to be in the Portland area, and we sourced these from a Portland company. I can't say definitively whether they're manufactured here, but we can follow up on that. But it's cornstarch. The stuff is tough. I know there are some issues as to whether these degrade quickly or slowly, but I bet you a lot of money it wouldn't take 1,000 years, as has been documented and supposed for plastic bags. So, again, I know we want to try to complicate these things often, and it's easy to do that, but I think this bill marks a real opening to just take a good step and to ban these, and you know what? People will survive. Stores will open the next day. You might have some of those folks using paper bags, but I bet you a lot will recognize the wisdom of choosing something that's sustainable and long-term, and I bet you can get a decade worth of use out of bags like this, if not more. So I'll leave it at that, and thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Senator Przanski?
Bill, can you give us clarification? You made a statement about the inappropriateness or, I guess, illegal use of reusable bags.
Yeah, Senator Przanski, Chair Dean Filter, no, the health, your health codes basically say if you do prepared food, you're not supposed to accept anything over the counter, except there's a specific exemption for money. So you, like, if you grow
I won't
up,
tell you where I shop or where I get my stuff, because they actually do use our containers.
I'm not say do use what?
They use containers we bring to them to fill.
I don't. But I mean, if you drive up to a drive-through window, it says,
right,
"Please do not offer anything through the container." It's because it's in violation of the health code.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's not overcomable. I'm just saying under the current rules, it would not be applicable to use reusable bags in restaurants.
If I can follow up.
Sorry. Yeah.
And I think I understand what the confusion is, because you're talking about in a restaurant.
Yes.
And I think you're talking about like at a co-op where you're bringing containers for
or
food.
Deli.
Yeah.
But what I'm assuming you're saying is that at the point of for the container that's going to take the food, not necessarily the containers that are going to carry the food that's been put in a container.
It's
or both.
Senator Przanski, Chair Dingfelder, it's either. I mean, like I said, they could hand you the food, you could put it in your bag, but technically you're not supposed to hand anything over the counter to them that's not from the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I'm not saying that we can't get around it, but I do think it's something.
Well, there's some people that are already getting around it.
Oh, well, no, I.
we won't invite anybody up here.
Like I always like to say, you didn't ask if it was common, you asked if it was legal. There's two different.
Yeah.
We will have a don't ask, don't tell policy right up here at the dais. Okay. Any other questions?
Boy,
Senator Hass.
Yes, many thanks to Travis Williams for snapping off those pictures this morning of the bags in the Willamette, although it's a shame that it was so easy for you to do that. Willamette runs into the Columbia, Columbia runs into the ocean.
Yeah, it took about 15 minutes in total, I think.
I was going to say, and if I was along the Columbia Slough in my district, I won't tell you how quickly it would have been to snap those from my bicycle as well, because it's pretty prevalent. Okay, any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. We have just a few more folks that would like to testify, Elise Brown and Betsy Earls. Elise? Betsy here? Okay. And then last up we have Katie Daly and Jeff Murray, and I can't fit you all up, so you'll come up afterwards. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, whoever wants to go first, welcome.
I'll go first.
Okay.
For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries and AOI's Retail Council, sometimes called the AOI Retail Committee, but composed of most of the retailers in the state and across the country. As the bill's currently written, we oppose Senate Bill 1009, but we also understand and very much support the intent of the bill, which is, at least in great part, to limit the negative impacts of plastic bags in the environment. We are, however, concerned that a total ban on the use of plastic bags would have unintended negative repercussions, including economic repercussions and environmental among them. And we would therefore prefer to see a solution that's oriented more toward recycling instead of prohibition. In fact, as I know that you've already discussed, many of our retail members are already offering voluntary recycling programs through their stores, as well as selling reusable bags at their registers at minimal cost. Some of those retailers are actually taking the recycled plastic bags and turning them into the reusable plastic bags that they have available at their cash registers. We would very much welcome the opportunity to work with the grocers, the recyclers, the garbage haulers, with Senator Haas, with DEQ, with interested stakeholders, to develop a system that minimizes the negative impacts of plastic bags on the environment while we can still work to put them to the best use possible.
Okay, that's it. That was quick.
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, Elise Brown here today representing AT&T, and we are here in opposition joining other retailers. As you know, AT&T has multiple small retail locations and kiosks around the state, and although the bill does allow an exemption for reusable plastic bags, the way the bill is defining that, we would not be in compliance, so therefore we are in opposition. And for us, I think Sean Miller's earlier testimony really hits the nail on the head. We are a national corporation with 50 state retail operations, and we would be addressed with a patchwork of different state regulations, and along with that, the cost that ultimately would get passed on to the consumer. So while I appreciate Senator Haas for bringing the bill forward, a great idea. We, again, would like to work with you in the interim to address the heart of the goal, which I think we can get to, without bringing new costs to business. So, again, here to oppose and happy to work with you in the interim. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for these panelists? Nope. Okay, thank you very much. And last up is Katie Daly and Jeff Murray. And then is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill that did not sign up for Senate Bill 1009? No? Okay. Katie, do you want to start? Or?
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Katie Daly. I am the co-president of Recycling Advocates, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 1009. I just want to echo a lot of the things that have already been said. I think that this is a great first step of addressing a very big problem, and that's the proliferation of the use of single-use bags. From our perspective, we do see a problem with both plastic and paper bags, and I understand that the environmental impacts of them are different, but I think we should recognize that the problem has been the proliferation of single-use bags. We are a society that didn't have single-use bags until the mid-20th century, and in fact, plastic bags didn't start coming on the scene until, I think, the 70s and the 80s. So we were able to survive a time before all checkout bags were free, and definitely before there were plastic bags. So I think we as a society should be able to adapt to changes, and I think this would be a really good first step. We agree that a statewide approach would be preferable, as long as it's an approach that's robust enough to actually solve some problems. And I don't want to limit other jurisdictions' abilities to maybe tackle this in other ways. So I wouldn't like to see something that would keep innovation out of local jurisdictions, because I think there are some good ideas out here that may not make it into this bill. I applaud the goal of the Grocery Association and other associations that have come up, that the goal is to move people to reusable bags from the single-use bags, because that would be our goal as well. I think there are a couple of ideas here that are good ideas that we should think about, but I do want to remind people that in general, it does take a bit of a strong arm in order for us to see results. Voluntary measures do not generally see the results that, other things like bans do. I think right now the recycling rate for plastic bags is 1 to 2%, even with all the opportunities that you have in grocery stores. You know, unlike the bottle bill, there's no deposit, there's no incentive for people to bring them back. There's a lot of other uses for plastic bags that people, you know, use them for dog waste and other things like that. There just isn't the incentive. I think there's also a perception issue out there that they're just bringing them back and nothing's being done with it. I don't know. We hear that quite often, that people think that the loop isn't being closed at, the grocery stores. And I think because of some past issues with grocery stores just dumping their bags, that has been able to kind of proliferate itself into the mindset of some people who want to be doing the right thing but realize they don't necessarily see that the right thing is being done. So we would support a ban, but would like to see something that would address, you know, make sure that it doesn't offset all into paper bags, whether that is taking the cost that will be passed on to the consumer away from the hidden side, or to be explicitly line-itemed when you buy your groceries. If you have three paper bags, then you get charged whatever it costs to provide those three paper bags and have that line item. That would at least allow consumers to see there is a cost associated with getting non-reusable bags at the checkout, free bags at the checkout, not free, as we know. There also may be some other things around recycled content requirements of paper bags that would help lower their environmental footprint and hopefully spur on local industries that do create recycled craft paper in Oregon and Washington. So I think there are some things that we could do to even make this bill better from an environmental perspective, and to hopefully address the issue of trying to reduce our consumption overall. And I wanted to answer some questions about the health code violations. It is true. It's actually a federal law that drives the inability of restaurants to legally provide you food in containers that you bring them, as well as, like you said, passing something over the counter. You can take it and put it in a bag, but you can't pass it over the counter. And it's federal law that prohibits that. So we're in I try to violate it all the time, but... it is a federal law, unfortunately.
Okay.
So that's it.
Great, thank you. And last but not least, didn't hear from Far West Fibers.
Chair Dingfelder.
Need the mic.
Yeah, you need to slide a mic over to you. There you go.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Haas, and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Murray. I'm here today representing Far West Fibers. I'm the Vice President of Business Development for Far West Fibers, and I've been working on this bag issue for going on 7 years. I am here today in support of the Senate bill. Far West Fibers is a privately owned Oregon corporation. We operate two major MRFs in the Portland metropolitan area. We employ 90 people full-time, and we have 80 temporary workers that also work for us full-time, primarily in the sort area. Our facilities currently handle about 10,000 tons per month of curbside commingled, not to mention commercial mix. In any given month.
Excuse me, Jeff. Are you plugged in there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's not coming up.
Oh, you guys aren't seeing a thing. I see.
No, we have our handout, but
everyone
else.
Should I just? I'll continue.
We've got the paper.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Did you hit? Is it F4? And then it'll...
Who's working on it?
Yeah. No, it didn't work. Okay. All right, well...
Is F4 the other one?
Yeah, F4 is usually what happens, is then you can toggle it. Okay.
About...
This is our... Yeah, you can. Yeah, usually you just... Sue will come over and fix it.
Okay.
There we go.
There we go.
Hey.
Okay. I apologize for that. In any given month, Far West Fibers handles between 40 and 50% of the curbside recyclables collected in the state of Oregon. Next month, we will be opening up our third MRF in Senator Haas's district in Beaverton. We'll reoccupy the building we were in 10 years ago. Many people don't want to ask what a MRF is because they figure they should know. I won't go into this in detail, but the most important are the first two. The materials recovery facility is a facility where commingled recyclables are delivered to be separated and baled and marketed as raw materials for remanufacturing and processing. Pretty basic.
Yeah, you don't need to be right up to the mic. It sounds better if you're a little away.
All righty. The operations within the MRF are designed to be as, and this is the most important part, automated as possible to increase speed of operation, reduce cost, and improve recovery of recycled materials. This is a typical screen in a MRF that's used for sorting paper from containers. In the most MRFs, you'll see up to maybe 7 different screens for sorting various materials by type. And primarily what it's doing is sizing the material and also separating by weight. But this is what the screen should look like. If you can read below on this, this screen was completely clean at the start of the shift. This is only 2 hours into the shift. Every 2 to 2.5 hours during break, we have 6 people that we have to do lockout, tagout, they tie off for safety, et cetera, and they have to cut all this stuff, which is primarily plastic bags and other types of film plastic, day in and day out, no exception. Plastic bags and are causing our systems to fail, and this is not just a Far West Fibers problem. It's not really just an Oregon problem. There is not a MRF, to our knowledge, in the country that handles commingled material and has screens for separating that is not choking on this stuff. The screens are cleaned during every break. Plastic bags themselves are estimated to be about 60% of the film plastic within the commingled. That leaves another 40% of other types of film plastic, which we also have a concern with. This problem continues to get worse, not better. Today, nearly 32% of our sort line labor is used to remove film plastics. This was a non-existent problem in 2001. This gives you an idea by weight how much film plastic makes up of the curbside commingled material. That 0.5% is probably an exaggeration. It's less than 0.5%. But with that given, on the far left is what we get on an average per month when we are able to sell the material. Sometimes we have issues selling what's called MRF film because it tends to be more contaminated. If we get $2,500 a month, we're happy. The cost for us is now escalated to $65,000 per month as our estimate in handling the plastic bags on the sort line, whether it's the labor of cutting them out of the screens or the actual labor of picking them, and we're not getting all the bags out. And next to that is our average cost for sort labor. What are we doing to solve the problem? Far West has added 9 additional sorters per shift. We run 4 shifts a day, 2 shifts at each facility. Far West Fibers has slowed the sort system to about 75% normal speed. Anybody with any business background knows this is not a successful direction to head. We accept film plastics at all 7 of our public depots that we operate throughout the Portland area. Past several years, local governments and metro and haulers and processors and advocates have tried to reach out at the curb to educate the public. Association of Recyclers last week held a forum to specifically discuss this issue. Senator Haas was good enough to attend, and a number of people in the room attended. There was no real conclusion from it, but we got people talking, we believe. And finally, I'm here to help support this bill and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? I just have a quick one regarding that second to last slide where you've had to add additional sorters and you're saying that you're operating at 75% of your capacity. Financially, I mean, have you quantified what that means for you as far as annual losses?
If it keeps going this direction.
Yeah.
The fortunate thing is we're not the only company suffering through this. All of our costs are going up. So it's who's racing to the bottom first. So we pay less for the material or we charge in some situations. But that's not sustainable. We're headed the wrong way. This is, for us, this is the problem of our industry. And it's, like I said, not just for Far West Fibers.
Okay.
I did, Chair Dingfelder,
mm-hmm.
I did hear a few comments along the way. If I can make a couple of comments
sure.
back. Katie had asked about the bags from the grocery stores, and I can say that at least in the years I've been involved in recycling this material, because we do recycle it, the grocers are bailing this material up and they are marketing it. There has been times it's been difficult too, but I want to reassure that I know all the major stores are doing what they should do with this material. And while I'm at it, I wanted to also commend the Oregon Grocers, Northwest Grocers, for what they've done over the last, I would say, 18 months in really stepping up the promotion of reusable bags and discouraging of the use of plastic bags. And, another concern, and this was from DEQ, was in regards to the bags causing gases in a landfill. Brown fiber has somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 80% recovery rate in the state of Oregon. That's what a paper bag is brown fiber, similar to cardboard. I don't have the number for the amount of film plastic that's recovered in Oregon, but I would say at best it wouldn't be the reverse of that number.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, both of you. Before we adjourn, the one group we have not heard from, and I do know there's some people here, if you would like to come up, is from the paper bag industry. From the paper bag industry. I don't know. I do see some folks in the back. Do you wish to come up and make any comments? Okay. All righty. Seeing shaking their heads. I don't want it to seem like we're not having equal opportunity here for everybody to come speak up. All right. With that, I will close the...
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
I do want to say many thanks to everyone on this. If nothing else, the last 48 hours have been, stories, dialogue in the press, in this building, and I think that's positive, if nothing else. There are some amendments that we're working on together. And stay tuned.
All righty. You heard that. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1009. Stay tuned for future updates on that bill. And we are adjourned. Early.
Hey, keep up.